Welcome on in, everyone, to episode one of our DSP series. Sitting here with Adam Lott. Hello, Adam.
Hey, Justin. Glad to be here, as always.
I am your host here, Justin Knuckles, host of the podcast at Better Media. Wanted to bring you guys a new series, a little bit more in-depth on DSP, a topic that Adam and I have talked about here on the podcast quite a bit already. In fact, we just put out one of our first episodes we ever talked about on DSP, going pretty in-depth on the basics. So if you go back and listen, we put it out on April 11th called Amazon DSP, Targeting Differences from Sponsored Display. So that's a great step one. If you're curious at what DSP even is, what are the differences from PPC? We're going to go pretty in-depth here on all those topics. But if you're just curious at step one, what even is it? I'd go back and review that episode. And we'll include a link here in the show notes for you guys to go back and find that episode. But that being said, here in this episode, Adam and I wanted to start with, what does it look like to even get into and start testing Amazon DSP if you're already doing PPC, or even if you're not and you're a brand and advertiser that sells off of Amazon? Or what can we do in Amazon DSP that we cannot do in Amazon Ad Console? Again, different from your PPC. And then also how to integrate and have your DSP work with your PPC. So those are some of the topics we want to get into today, pretty in depth. But Adam, I know we touched on this at the end of that last episode. We talked on DSP about way back in the day. But if someone wanted to get into and start testing DSP, what would that look like? Where would they start? What does it take to get started?
Sure. So I know there's a lot of inquiry about DSP as of late, right? And its capabilities. And more sellers have actually approached us about testing DSP, getting into it, if their brand is right. And what we want to evaluate off the bat is, hey, is this a worthwhile venture for that specific brand? So upon request, right, there are two ways to get into DSP. One is directly through Amazon in self-service, which is a bit pricier, has greater minimums, if you will, in terms of monthly budget. And the other option is to go through an agency who has a seat in DSP. And that's exactly what we do here at Better Media. So essentially we have our DSP seat. We will build out DSP for all of our managed brands directly in-house. And to your second question, Justin, what we want to establish right off the bat is on the product to product level and brand to brand level, if testing DSP is worth it, right? We want to iron out the intent with that strategy and that push essentially, and where we're going to be bucketing that money. A lot of times it's a remarketing versus prospecting and awareness split, right? A lot of times it's heavy investment into cross promotion and upsell strategies, but ultimately that is our first determination. Is it worth testing for where your brand is at this point in time?
Yeah. I want to put a concrete number to these entry points to what it takes to get into working with Amazon and what it takes to get into working with an agency. So whether you are or you're not a seller on Amazon, I know you've worked with a few, what we're going to call non-endemic, meaning brands that do not sell on Amazon, but still leveraging sure. DSP. If you're either of those brands and you're coming to an agency, what is really the benchmark requirement to get started? I.e., what does it cost? What are the budgets that you would typically get started with an agency on?
Yeah, that's a great question. And again, it definitely is brand to brand specific. The greater amount of money we can test in DSP, obviously, the better data insight we'll have into what's working, what's not, right? And we can utilize that entirety of budget across a greater amount of ASINs, whether your product catalog is 10 SKUs or 100,000 SKUs. We want to essentially divide up that money off the bat, right? And see where it makes sense to invest. In terms of starting budgets with Amazon, I believe the minimum, Justin, was $35,000. Correct me if I'm wrong.
It was $35,000 and maybe more than that as of lately, but I know it's at least $35,000 versus an agency is what?
Our minimums are we can work with a $10,000 DSP budget, and we can segment that out across prospecting strategies, your marketing strategies, et cetera. But again, it just matters in the scope, right? In the scope of the product catalog, how much traffic is going to those specific ASINs. For large enterprise brands, we could take $10,000 and invest that all across one flagship product. So we need to have those general conversations brand to brand before we put a hard number on that budget, if you will.
Yeah. And I know we're on the same page here. I just wanted to come lead with the hard hitting questions first, because I know everyone's wondering, what does it cost to get started? So that being said, there are a lot lower minimums and requirements for getting started with an agency such as Better Media. That being said, though, we don't typically take a small budget like that and try to spread it across your whole catalog like maybe do on PPC. We need to be robust in our DSP builds and strategies, whether we're just upper funnel prospecting focused or whether we're just bottom of the funnel remarketing focused. Still takes a pretty robust build out and thus budget. So if we're working with, like you said, $10,000, that may go to one or two or three products at best, versus 5x that budget, we can do a lot with a lot more of the catalog. So just leveling the playing field there, what it takes to get started with DSPs. I know you mentioned it way back in the beginning, but does it even make sense for you? So where would you recommend someone get started with DSP if they're doing what else? Obviously, we want to have PPC if they're an Amazon advertiser and seller. We want to have PPC running efficiently, optimized, generating a lot of traffic. But what other requirements, if any, would you recommend people have before they consider DSP?
Sure. There is a retail readiness aspect of DSP on the product level that we want to make sure is sufficient before we test, right? Having a minimum 3.5-star review or rating, if you will. I believe it's 15 reviews at least before we would consider testing that product in DSP. Justin, anything to add there?
No, I think that those are the two points, is making sure that you're retail ready with ratings and reviews. And again, making sure, like I said, your PPC is really locked in, making sure that you're driving enough traffic to your listings. Because as we'll talk about later on, the custom audience building capabilities within DSP is a huge part of the value of DSP. So we want to make sure that you are building those audiences if you're not doing so with external traffic, that people searching for your main relevant keyword on Amazon, that they're coming to your detail page and we can continue remarketing to them through custom audiences. But we'll get into custom audiences at a later point in time. So looking ahead to getting started with DSP, some of the value that people may have heard about in previous episodes or even just around the industry about DSP is the access to 1P and 3P data. I know it's a huge part of why non-endemic brands come to Amazon DSP, right? It's why you see Geico advertising through Amazon DSP, is because the really in-depth data that they can get on Amazon customers and shoppers. So let's talk a little bit about that data. And like I mentioned just before, the custom audience abilities. What is this black box? Not that it's a black box. What is this secret of Amazon first party data? Let's explain that a little bit.
Sure. First party data, in a nutshell, quite literally means data provided directly from Amazon, right? Straight from the source. So the beauty with DSP and utilizing those 1P audience segments is the fact that we have massive amounts of potentially new to brand traffic to go after across a ton of different facets, right? Including lifestyle, behavioral, interest-based, new to category. You put up an interesting point the other day, Justin, on LinkedIn, that you had mentioned, I believe, new to category audiences update every 8 seconds. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah. So in market audiences, lifestyle, I believe lifestyle audiences as well, will update every 8 seconds. If you're going after someone that's within your category, within your aisle for a product, as soon as they buy your product or a competitor's product, they're taken out of that in market. They're no longer shopping for that product anymore, right? So that's updated 8 seconds after they purchase. So that's much faster than I've heard other DSP platforms do. So not to call out any names, I know theirs can be much longer than even just a couple of weeks. Limiting the wasted ad spend through DSP is a huge point of value.
100%. And this sort of insight and direction really helps with new-to-brand customer acquisition and testing those audiences. I know you had talked about the fact that we have custom audience capability as well. And something that we can do is exclude purchasers, right? So you can imagine the power behind first-party audiences that are updated every 8 seconds. And then excluding our own past purchasers while targeting those audiences, that is a funnel of new to brand traffic directly to your listings or to your store or however you have DSP set up, right? I would say, not to get ahead of ourselves, but that would be one major difference between the search side of things and capabilities there and what DSP can do as a whole. We can drill down to specific audience groups who are aware of your brand, who have touched your brand, who have purchased from your brand, versus those who have never even clicked on a PDP, right? Or at least not in the last 365 days or what have you. The beauty is in the granularity here, for sure.
I know we've often talked about the benefit of excluding past purchasers, but I want to flip the coin and talk about the benefit of including those past purchasers, especially for brands that have repeat product purchases. I think I'm saying that right. Or if you specifically wanted to target a competitor's purchasers, right? Like, you could remarket to your own viewers and browsers and shoppers, but how do you make sure that you're going after loyal shoppers of your competitor's brand? DSP is one way to do that because we can specifically target past purchasers of specific ASINs. So I wanted to give some value on targeting those past purchasers because oftentimes we talk about, hey, let's go remarket to those that have viewed our product, but let's make sure to exclude those that already purchased. Right. But the flip side of that is, hey, we can make sure that we're bringing loyalty back to the brand and like another layer down in remarketing saying, let's bring back people.
Sure. And that's exactly to a T what I was getting at with the granularity aspect of DSP, right? With sponsored display remarketing, our options are customized lookback windows. I believe it's 7, 30, 60, 90, et cetera. And with DSP, right, we can drill down to customer intent when it comes to remarketing. So I think of our low-hanging fruit with CPG. Let's assume a product is a 30-day serving size or cycle or whatever. We would then utilize 7-day views of that audience, or excuse me, of that ASIN, those who have engaged with that specific listing or landed on that PDP in the last week, excluding the past 30 days of purchasers. And what that essentially would do would be to go after those who engage with the product but have not purchased in 30 days. And that hits two groups. That hits those who are in market now and those who maybe purchased 30 days ago and are now out of that specific serving. But the beauty with DSP, right, is that it's completely customizable in terms of what audiences we include and exclude. So as an example, and to your point, Justin, something we can do in terms of loyalty remarketing is to go after those who have purchased your products in the last year, but not over the last 6 months. And essentially what that means is, hey, these guys, or this specific subset of customers did purchase from us maybe a year ago, and maybe have moved off. Maybe they need a bit of a reminder to purchase again, right? No two paths to purchases are linear. I say that lightly, but we want to make sure we're hitting customers at every stage of the journey, of their journey, right? Two path to purchase. And essentially DSP helps us really fill those gaps that search can't quite do just yet.
Absolutely. And I know a large portion of this conversation, we've been focused on that endemic advertiser, that person that sells on Amazon with a product. They have a buy box. They are probably selling through FBA. But I want to shift this conversation a little bit over to like the non-endemic brand, people that are advertising like Geico. Like, why does it make sense for them? So let's talk about everything we've talked about up till now, like audiences. So in Geico's case, right, if we're looking at custom audiences, who could they go target specifically? They can target people that are in the market for products that you buy when you get a brand new car, right? Because that shopper is probably, again, just bought a car and they likely need insurance, or they may be in the market to switch insurance. Sure. So that custom audience ability is huge. The placements, which is something we haven't talked about even till now that we'll get into later, but all the Amazon owned and operated properties that you can't have access to with anywhere else that Geico's advertising. They may be running their ads through a bunch of other agencies that are doing a fantastic job, but they don't have access to Amazon owned and operated properties. So that's where you're going to have to get into DSP to leverage some additional placements. But between the audiences, the placements, anything else that is huge value in your eyes, Adam, to non-endemic brands selling through, or advertising rather, through Amazon DSP?
Sure. I think the first party utilization is huge here because it's not just product based, right? It's interest based. It's browsing history based or previous activity based. It's lifestyle based. Those, like you had said, of who have just purchased a new car, those who are new to category for 2024 Toyota Tacoma accessories or what have you, right? So there's a ton that we can do there, but I would say one piece that we haven't hit on yet is the fact that we can divert traffic directly to D2C sites from DSP. So we can utilize those first party audiences and then drive traffic from those audiences directly to your website as opposed to Amazon. And that's where the non-endemic bread and butter comes in. I think it's Amazon did a great job of opening up the platform to those who aren't selling physical products on Amazon. And that is just a funnel of ad spend directly to DSP. And we've seen that And ultimately, the interest increased over the last few months and ultimately the last few years. So really excited to see what continues to come of non-endemic advertising and DSP.
Yeah, I think the capabilities non-endemic brands compared to endemic brands have is almost equal at this point, right? There's like all the same placements that you achieve, all the same creatives you achieve, like they can be done right. The same. For a brand like Geico, they could go remarket or they could go do some awareness building to people that just bought the car dent remover products that you stick to your car and pull out your dents. Or if you're a local plumber, a regional plumber, maybe you advertise to people that just bought a bunch of plungers or something ridiculous like that, right? You can make the connections there as to why non-endemic brands would want to come advertise onto Amazon DSP. So speaking as we've been talking a little bit about awareness, remarketing, we're going to do a whole other episode on what those focuses look like and what the DSP buildouts might differ between those two. But what are some of the differences, just lightly, what are some of the differences between a prospecting focus and the remarketing before we get into that in a separate episode? We've been talking pretty heavily about like these non-endemic brands, which more so build awareness, and some of these Amazon brands, which do a bit of both.
They're certainly different intent. And this is the same across the search side as well, right? There's going to be different intent between remarketing-based targeting and awareness-based targeting, right? Very similar on the search side. A rank campaign should not be optimized the same way as a profitability-based campaign or a branded keyword campaign, right? The intent with those with the targets across all of those strategies is vastly different. So with DSP, we are able to do things like set specific KPI per strategy, i.e. part of the marketing funnel, right? We optimize awareness strategy much differently than we do remarketing. Mm-hmm. And with that, I will say that there is very, very customizable capabilities into the creative aspect of DSP. So as we hit each part of the customer journey, right? From conquesting away from competitors or awareness at the top of funnel or loyalty remarketing at bottom of funnel, we can customize messaging there as well. So that is a big differentiator, I think, between sponsored products, sponsored brands, although we do have ad copy, of course, custom imagery, et cetera, and what we can do here in the DSP.
Yeah, as we'll get into in later episodes, a lot of DSP, whether you are remarketing or whether you are awareness prospecting focused, is focused on brand building. Again, the custom creative capabilities allows you to really paint a picture for your brand more so than you can just through top of search PPC ads, right? So no matter what your focus is, awareness or remarketing, you should have I want to come back to the original question of what it takes to get into DSP. You should definitely have a strong brand before getting into DSP. Would you agree with that, Adam?
I 100% would agree with that. I think right now on Amazon, we're seeing a separation between brands who focus on aspects of brands or aspects of being a brand versus those who are just trying to sell a product on Amazon. And the latter is very, very tough to achieve relative success on DSP. So I would say you hit the nail on the head in terms of brands building on DSP being a powerful, powerful aspect.
So I want to shift, as I said in the beginning, to a new topic here, which is the differences between DSP and your current PPC advertising strategies. Sorry to our non-endemic listeners, we'll get back to you a little bit later. But if you are running your ads currently through Amazon PPC, which as we said earlier, should be one of the main requirements before getting started with DSP, people have to understand that DSP and PPC speak different languages. So I want to talk a little bit about that here, not only like the KPIs, but the targeting differences, the creative differences, all of which we've been touching on already. But let's start there, Adam. How would you, if I was brand new to DSP and I was talking to you at a conference, how would you tell me what the differences are between DSP and PPC?
Yeah, I think we've done a good job of hitting on the big differences, but I would high level ultimately say if I'm spelling it out to someone who has no understanding of the differences in the platform, my first call would be cost per click versus VCPM. And what that drills down to essentially is keyword targeting versus audience targeting with the custom audience capability that you had mentioned. That's an insanely powerful tool that we don't have access to directly in search, right? So that would be one major difference. But
so
I would honestly
there say, is the bidding difference, right? We have a CPC versus VCPM, which
sure.
I know we're starting to see a little bit more of within Ad Console through things like top of search sponsored brand, certain forms of sponsored display. But to those new to DSP, that's just paying per impression versus paying for every click. It's not that you're paying much more for DSP on a bidding model.
Right.
It's just a different way of getting in front of eyeballs. So that is one huge difference is our bidding model. Let's go to targeting, like you said, keyword versus audience, a large bit of which we've touched on already. But anything else to add to that?
Yeah, I think 1P audiences and custom audience capability. And again, that is purchase audiences, view through audiences, similar product audiences, et cetera. We can also move up a level and hit on storefront specific audiences, right? Those who have landed on specific store subpages and engage with those specific store subpages. That would be an opportunity as well. We also have audio ads now, which is pretty cool. Something that we haven't quite tested yet, but a relatively new release.
Any other differences aside from bidding or targeting differences from PPC to DSP?
I would say one additional difference on the audience side, right, would be the fact that we do have access to third-party audiences as well. So there's quite a few 3P audiences that we can test through DSP, but essentially what that also allows us to do are create lookalike audiences, upload email lists, get a bit more specific with traffic on your D2C site that we want to have another touch point across. So that would be one additional example. And then for my last example, I would say just general placements across Amazon and off Amazon. That is how we do segment out performance across on platform and off platform and DSP. But through Amazon's owned and operated exchanges, and I'm speaking purely to static ads here, video is a whole other subject. We have visibility opportunity that does not exist in search just yet. So through those 3P exchanges, essentially, or owned and operated exchanges, we can advertise off platform, right? And where those placements live are places like ESPN, CNN, CBS, Fox News, USA Today, I believe is one example, NBC, the list goes on and on. Massive, massive visibility opportunity there.
I go back to the point of talking about audiences. The main difference for me to DSP to PPC is PPC to me is advertising at a point in time. You're not sure where that customer is in their journey, right? If they're searching for your most relevant keyword, they may be ready to buy. They maybe have researched your product for 3 weeks and they're searching this to buy right now. Another person may search that same keyword and be at step one of their journey. So that's why I love DSP is you're targeting a customer rather than a point in time where we can add all these, like you said, criteria of granularity. They have to have viewed my product but not purchased it, or they have to have purchased it a year ago but not in recent months. So you can add all these kind of criteria for a certain customer and tailor your advertising to that person. And I love that you added in some value there for the non-endemic brands, being able to upload your own audiences to create lookalikes. So you, again, going back to my Geico example, if you have, as I'm sure you do, all your customer data on who your current insurance holders are, you'd upload that right to Amazon DSP and find relevant people that look like those types of shoppers on Amazon that meet that kind of criteria. So that's the value of audience building aside from just targeting a specific keyword or category or product target in PPC.
Good point.
Another point you had made, Adam, was talking about the placement differences and the creative differences. So our really only creative ad types, I don't want to say our only creative ad types in PPC because Amazon's been generous and giving us a lot more as of lately. But currently, we really only have sponsor brand, custom images and video, sponsored display, custom images and video, and now sponsored TV to really showcase the lifestyle, the brand imagery, and the look and feel of who you are. Versus DSP has a book full of creatives that we can use to showcase all these things, our product, our brand, et cetera. So as I already ran down the list of PPC creative ad types, let's talk on DSP and some of those creative ad types from our REC, responsive e-commerce, to video and audio ads, as you've referred to.
Sure. I would say the largest investment across our managed brands is certainly in responsive e-commerce creative. Back in the day, and by back in the day, roughly 1.5 short years ago, probably if I'm estimating correctly, we did not have access to responsive e-commerce creatives. We had access to dynamic e-commerce creatives. And essentially what that means is that we had to build out separate creatives per size on where that specific creative would serve on or off of Amazon, right?
And let's pause there. How many different placements are there just for the dynamic responsive e-commerce now, as it's called? How many different sizes were there?
Off the top of my, it had to have been
like over 10, over a dozen, 20. Right? Yeah, at least 20. So that's 20 creatives for one single ad, one single campaign versus now this responsive e-commerce does all of it in one, right?
Right. And now, mind you, we did have to evaluate inventory per placement, right? A banner ad on Amazon is going to hold more inventory than a sidebar ad on some third-party website. That specific placement then would be utilized a bit more. With responsive e-commerce, the beauty is that we create one creative. Let's say it's a remarketing push for one specific ASIN, right? And I say that because we do not roll out creatives as a blanket strategy, right? So that's where I would leave it with RECs and the fact that that's generally the bulk of our investment. Audio ads are up and coming with Amazon Alexa and additional audio streaming capabilities. So that's something we have yet to test in large quantities, but we're going to have more data there before too long, as I'm sure many agencies are. And the other side of it, which I see as a continued opportunity for growth across brands, is video, right? And we segment out video in DSP pretty specifically in terms of where those videos serve. So we have online video, we have streaming TV, we have Prime Video, we have Twitch, we have placements on IMDb, et cetera, et cetera. Justin, anything you want to add there in terms of
video?
Yeah,
and I definitely want to touch on that Prime Video one, because that's a pretty new creative that we now have even within DSP is Prime Video ads, which Prime Video being one of the leading streaming services now next to like Netflix, Hulu, HBO, but being able to basically run a commercial on some of those programs. Like, what are some of the best names right now? I know The Boys is a personal favorite here at Better Media, but know some top names recently have been like Mr. and Mrs. Smith, The Kelsey
Ricky
Show.
Stanicky.
Yeah. Is it like Ricky Stanicky? Yep. So many like really Hollywood level shows coming out of that that streaming platform. Now being able to run pre-roll, mid-roll, post-roll ads. Now having talked to the team, this is not a self-service option. It's not even something that we as an agency have abilities to do yet. Ask us later this year and we should, we might, fingers crossed. But right now that's only offered through Amazon as a managed service. But that being said is you'll be able to sponsor a program and make sure that your ad is seen every time someone goes in to watch The Kelsey Show or to watch Mr. and Mrs. Smith or whatever you're going to view. So again, those are all unique placements that you can't access anywhere else. So as more and more people are coming into Prime Video or all these incremental placements, it's worth getting into. In fact, having a conversation with Amazon, looking at the incrementality of all these placements is massive. I being one person that watch Prime Video, I don't watch Freevee or the other streaming platforms. If you are able to run a sponsored TV ad through Ad Console, as well as a Prime Video ad through DSP at some point in time, you're reaching more than likely two different audiences. So the incrementality of all these audiences is huge and placements. So yeah, I definitely wanted to hit on the differences of Prime Video ads and the incrementality of new creatives and ad types there in DSP. So again, speaking on the differences between PPC and DSP, we've talked a lot about placements, but specifically within DSP, we have our owned and operated properties, but then those third-party exchanges where you can go bid for placements that, like you said, is on ESPN.com or placements that Amazon doesn't own, but they can go out and compete against other DSP platforms. It's an all-in-one package, but anything else to hit on there between the differences in placements between PPC and DSP? I think it's pretty obvious at this point that PPC limits you to basically Amazon.com. And DSP opens up everything else, but anything else that I may have missed?
The only other aspect I want to add here in the differences between search and DSP when it comes to placements is budget segmentation between those placements, right? And we do have tools to pull those levers in search in terms of placement modifiers. If you want to get incredibly granular, let's say we test a single keyword for coffee cup as a sponsored product exact match, right? We implement a 20% top of search modifier in one campaign, 20% rest of search modifier in another campaign, 20% product page modifier in another campaign. That would be how we would influence different placements, right? Under one keyword on Amazon. But the beauty in DSP is that we segment line items or ad groups, if you will, based on where those specific creatives will serve. And that is purely due to risk, right? It should be relatively common knowledge that ads on Amazon should ideally be more profitable than ads off of Amazon, because the intent on Amazon then is either just to discover products or to purchase, right? The intent on USA Today may not be to purchase a coffee cup, right? And in turn, you may see a lower return in those specific placements because those audiences may not be as relevant. However, that can act in benefiting new-to-brand customer acquisition, driving traffic away from Amazon back to Amazon. There's a lot of different nuances between that segmentation, but that would be the biggest difference, I think, is just the fact that we can segment out performance between those placements.
Yeah, segmenting out where our ad is appearing, like you said, even on desktop versus mobile, which I think is changing here soon. But great segmenting point. Out our creatives, even two line items that look the exact same, or as you said, two campaign ad groups that look the exact same, may just have a creative change, right? And we're just A/B testing them. There's a lot of granularity and split testing that's capable, is a capability within DSP. So for those who have listened to this episode and they're pretty interested in getting started with DSP, or they're wondering, I believe I'm doing all the things right, but how would this play into my current PPC strategies? How would this be incremental to what I'm doing on DSP? How would that be incremental to what I'm doing on PPC? I know that's a conversation we get with a lot of people that want to get started with it, is how do I make sure I'm not just taking sales that would have already happened or taking my PPC sales? How do you integrate it with your current advertising strategy?
Sure. So I think of DSP, right, as completing that flywheel effect. If a sponsored product strategy is sound, then ideally you would be going after your top converters across high search volume keywords, high search volume category keywords to push awareness, all sorts of different targeting, right? And where DSP comes in then is a second lever in terms of hitting those customers again who may not have resonated with the first ad that they've seen. So again, I go back to my initial point where let's say I have a ranking campaign active for Coffee Cup, which is driving 20,000 detail page views a month or something along those lines, right? And let's say 10% of those purchase. That leaves 90% of that audience to just drift away into the abyss without actively hitting another touch point. This is where DSP comes in, and we can get hyper specific in terms of ASIN level remarketing, right? And I'm only using remarketing as an example because there are a ton of different ways we integrate PPC strategy, search strategy with DSP. But I would say low hanging fruit opportunities are to hit those in market customers again. Those who have not purchased that first time, let's hit them with another remarketing ad. And I think this is where AMC comes in as well. With the insights that we're able to gain through AMC, we're able to see path to purchase reports, probably butchering the terminology a bit since AMC is new and we're still in the exploratory phase. But something that I do for one of our larger managed brands is to take a look at how many ads are served on average before a consumer purchases between one of those brands. And that is how, it's another example of how we can layer in DSP. If we see a major spike between those who see two ads versus those who see three ads, then we're going to want to curate our strategy to make sure that we're hitting more touch points across that customer base, if you will. I could talk about that subject all day, but I will leave it there.
I know AMC was getting a little ahead of ourselves. We're definitely going to dive into AMC at some point, but that being a huge topic of the last year, in terms of how do we look at our search and DSP holistically? How are things working together? What are the path to purchases? What is the media mix of all the ad types that work best together? So some of the insights that we can take now from AMC. But that being said, how we integrate into your current advertising strategies, it really really depends on what your focus is with DSP, right? As we've been talking about, maybe having more of a prospecting awareness, brand building focus, you're probably going to need to support that on the search side with additional branded budget. There's probably going to be more people coming to the platform searching for your brand name, your product specific name, if you did a good job building a brand through awareness strategies. On the flip side of that, if you're just trying to remarket heavily through DSP, you need to make sure you're funding that properly on search with top of search funding and bidding on your most relevant competitive keywords, right? So they need to play together. You can't just expect to only bid on branded keywords on PPC and to heavily remarket to them if you're a brand that hasn't really built an audience yet. So it's really tailoring to what you're doing already on PPC. But yeah, there's a few specific call outs. I know we've talked a lot about like repeat purchasers and subscribe and save audiences. So that is one thing where if you're paying a lot in search to try to acquire customers to subscribe to your product, it's one thing I know I, having been a seller and working with sellers, have long asked for is what is our customer acquisition cost and our lifetime value for subscribe and save products, right? But instead of bidding like 3x your product price to get someone clicking into your product, let's go remarket to people that subscribe and save to other competitor products or to some of our own branded products and see if we can cross sell them. So that is one way to play into your PPC strategies is targeting your subscribe and save audiences. Anything else to add? That's a great call too.
I will mention, I liked your point with cost per click, right? And the fact that CPC across pretty much every major category right now is continuing to point upwards, right?
It's never going to stop.
It is never going to stop. We manage a pretty sizable NFL licensed apparel brand. The cost per click around Super Bowl time for those playoff teams, you wouldn't believe. You probably would if you're a seller or an advertiser on Amazon, but they're not cheap, right? So DSP, I'll rewind a bit. I think of search, the position for search or the job for search is to drive traffic to PDPs, right? That is the sole purpose, is to take relevant traffic, drive it to the PDP, and ultimately influence a purchase. Now, the PDP does its job of influencing a purchase once the ads have done their job of getting that traffic there. But there needs to be another touch point, right? So DSP can help to grow that AOV and grow that CAC, decrease that customer acquisition cost, while also simultaneously lessening your dependence on high CPC keywords. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And going back to where we started with even bidding, right? The differences between CPC and VCPM, going after an awareness audience through VCPM bidding, and then moving that person from an awareness customer into a consideration customer, into a remarketing customer, that path to purchase may be much cheaper than trying to accomplish that through search with 5 clicks, 10 clicks.
Right.
That acquisition cost, to your point, is much cheaper more than likely through a mix of CPCs and VCPM ad types.
Exactly. And I hate to use the Kansas City Chiefs as an example, but I will. As you can see behind me here, I am Pittsburgh Steelers guy, born and raised, that will always be. But for this example, because of the success Mahomes has seen, I will use their team as an example. Let's say in December, Kansas City Chiefs shirt keyword cost per click is $15, right? Which is not out of the ordinary for that time, especially considering that they're largely the number one trending team in the NFL over the last half a decade, I would say. That's a very expensive keyword on, let's say, a $25 product, right? Let's say we convert at 30%. It's $27 per every 3 clicks. It's a lot of money. Or I guess it would be if it was a $15 CPC keyword, it'd be $45 in ad spend on 3 clicks, right? With DSP, back to the first party audience examples, we can go after those who are interested in NFL football, and then we can drill down to geo-target them in the Kansas City metro area or within specific zip codes, right? That is an example of lessening your reliance on a $15 keyword and then getting hyper-specific in DSP in terms of geo-targeting and interest-based targeting. So there's a lot of combinations we can work with to achieve that point.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised we hadn't hit on that until now with the geo-targeting and some of those audience targeting abilities, like demographic targeting, geographic targeting, excuse me.
Right.
Example being, it's now April. It's getting pretty warm, at least here in Phoenix. We're hitting 100 already. So I know up in the Northeast, they may be a little bit chilly, having some cold mornings, but not many people are in the market for beanies right now. And I was selling beanies on DSP just recently and trying to maximize that budget where it would be most effective. And so the number one thing I went to was geographic targeting, making sure I'm excluding right. all those zip codes that are averaging pretty warm weather right now and don't need beanies. That's a huge point of emphasis there on the audience side too, is geographic targeting, demographic targeting, making sure that you're hitting the right person. If you have that data on your brand, who typically buys your product for the household, making sure you're advertising to that kind of subset of people. I just want to circle back there because that was a huge point of that we skipped over, really. Last point here on how to integrate into your current advertising strategies. Again, we're going to get into AMC, which brings us all together with much more light. But again, we can target people that have gone after brand-specific searches or been to storefronts. So as you've said before, we can target those that have searched or bought competitor brands or storefront brands. So as you're trying to really conquest your category within search, as most all of our brands and clients do want to do, it may be a little bit easier or added value to do it through DSP, where you can specifically target shoppers that have been to those competitor storefronts, have bought those competitor products, rather than just trying to, again, right. capture a point in time on their SERP when someone's searching their brand name. So another
wonderful call, Justin. And I think about branded search volume here or branded searches, right? Let's say somebody searches the word Nike men's shoes, right? We can't exclude purchasers. We can't segment out that audience. All we know about that audience is those who have searched for Nike men's shoes are aware of Nike men's shoes, right? We have no idea if 20% of that audience who's still searching for that had purchased over the last few months or not. In DSP, if Nike men's shoes was our direct competitor and we held some sort of competitive advantage over them, now it is Nike. I'm just using this as an example, of course. If we held a competitive advantage, whether it be price point or rating review count, et cetera, we could then go after purchasers of those specific shoes, maybe who have purchased in the last 6 months and maybe apt to purchase a new running shoe, right? Maybe they're not brand loyal. Maybe they're looking for a more affordable option, et cetera, et cetera. So another example of where we can get hyper-specific in terms of conquesting away from competitors.
I want to save a little bit for the next conversation we have, where I think we're going to get into talking a lot more in detail on what the build out looks like. What strategies are we going to actually implement for someone that's a bit more focused on brand building, awareness building? We talked about new product launches. This is really where we're going to lean new product launches into is building the awareness, versus those that are focused on remarketing and maybe products that are a little bit more expensive and take longer to convince the customer that this product will help them. So we'll talk on the build outs of awareness first remarketing next time. Talking a lot on those creatives, we've talked about audio, we've talked about video, RECs, and how we even tailor just like what looks like a native Amazon ad, but to different stages of the funnel, maybe just through headlines or creative image. So we'll talk on creative best practices. And then again, those audiences. I know, Adam, you've worked with some 3P audiences and building lookalikes. So I want to dive into almost a case study from you of what that looks like versus everything we've touched on here with first party abilities and going after like in markets, lifestyle audiences. So look ahead to next time. Again, if you listen to this and you were a little bit lost as to what is DSP, I need like the basics laid out for me, then I would go back and listen to that episode again that we'll include here in the show notes. But thank you all for being here. This is episode 1 of our DSP series. Stay tuned for next time, and we'll chat next time. See you guys.